Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd of February, Anno Domini 2019, and you, no, 2020. And, yeah, living in the past. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. You can now add one more fail to the Windows 10 Update Hall of Fame. It's another month.
Another
Update Tuesday.
Another whole ship.
Yep. The Windows 10 KB4532693 update was already problematic as it was causing the operating system to boot with the default start menu and desktop. All shortcuts and customization options disappeared, but now there's an even bigger problem. The update is also said to be deleting files saved on the desktop. A bug in the update is apparently hiding user profiles and their respective data for some Windows 10 systems. While many users are able to restore their files from the temporary folder, some users who have lost all desktop files are unable to get around that profile folder. In some cases, users have completely failed to find any sign of the vanished personal data after installing Windows 10 KB4532693. Not being able to view or access your original Windows 10 profile is beyond annoying, so it's understandable why users are frustrated. It seems that the original user profile folders are still available on disk, but renamed with a .000 or .bak extension. And while there is a way to recover the profiles, you could permanently lose your data. The better answer is to simply uninstall KB4532693, which you'll be able to do under the Windows Update menu. From there, you click View Update History, then Uninstall Updates. Lastly, you right-click on the KB4532693 update to uninstall it. Amazingly, this is already the third high-profile Windows 10 fail for 2020, and February isn't even over yet. Earlier this month, the Windows 10 update, different one, KB4532695, caused slow Wi-Fi speeds, sound issues. January, a critical security update for Windows 10 failed to install altogether. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 update removing user profiles. And your choices are, it happened to me, I'm worried. It didn't happen to me, Windows, and other. So far, we've got about 219 votes. So far, it didn't happen to me is number one, followed by I'm worried, followed by it happened to me. 249 mm-hmm. already voters.
That's good.
Followed by it happened to me, followed by Windows, and other was 10. And if you do say other, please feel free to leave a comment in the forums. And how do you get to the forums? Well, that's actually pretty easy. Go to our website, soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 22 Feb 20, Win 10 update removing user profiles. And you can certainly leave a comment there. But, of course, as always, you can give us a call here, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And there have been previous Microsoft updates that have deleted all your user files, too. So that's back again.
Yeah, it's not new.
It leaves them in the temporary folder. So I suppose they're trying to be good. They're making a temporary folder to put all your stuff in while they do the update, and they're just forgetting to move it back.
Yeah.
And then deleting the temporary folder.
Yep. It's It's ridiculous. I'm trying to put it semi-politely.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. This is Microsoft. This is Microsoft, one of the biggest companies on the entire planet, and they can't get something like this right?
And
what the...
I think they've been doing it for a little while.
Just a few days, and you would
think... A couple years, maybe.
Yeah. And you would think that somebody in their... Well, of course, they fired their entire QA department. Laid off. Mm-hmm. Their entire QA department, which says a lot about why the quality... it's a technical term. Sucks. At this point, the reality is that, in fact, we have seen the quality of Microsoft code, the quality of their product drop like a rock recently. And yes, they're saving money. God bless them. But they're not doing us any good.
Well, nobody's buying Windows. That's the problem. They don't have any money left.
Well, the thing of it is they're only getting Windows if they buy a new machine and it's pre-installed.
Right.
It's not like it's on the shelves like you used to be able to back in the day when Windows 98 and 97, Windows 7 and all that were on the shelves that you could go into a store and say, oh, yes, I want to buy my copy of Windows. People just don't do that anymore. They just buy a machine and it's pre-installed. And they said, the heck with it. Yep. Otherwise, they're getting Chromebooks.
Well, that's exactly right. That's one of the problems Microsoft has.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have been pushing with their board to make Windows a subscription model product. Because then they're guaranteed money every year.
Mm-hmm.
Right now.
Keep the stockholders happy.
Keep the stockholders. That's
all it is.
Their stockholders are, in fact, their customers.
Yep.
We are the product they sell to their customers.
Even though that product is junk.
Well, no, we're the product. And the way they get that product to them is through Windows, which is, in fact, junk. But the problem remains that there just isn't any quality anymore in Windows. They have gotten rid of their entire QA department. That's why people find that new drivers don't work. If you have anything the slightest bit unusual, they pushed it off onto the vendors. So if you buy a new laptop, say, or desktop, you buy a new computer with Windows on it, that company has created, or if you buy a white box, the parts manufacturers,
is responsible.
Right. The NVIDIA card. NVIDIA is responsible for that. They create all the drivers. And if it weren't for them, Windows would barely boot.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's nothing new and innovative that Windows can do. So even when they went from Windows 7 to Windows 10, I mean, all they did was change, the appearance of the screen and rename stuff.
Well, because everyone hated Windows 8 because it looked so different, so they made 10 look like 7 again.
But it's just well, all of it is still using the original Windows NT kernel.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed in 10 years.
That's how we got to version 10.
Close to 20 years that hasn't changed. And so they move icons around in the control panel and rename the stuff.
Yep.
BFD.
Yep. Yep.
I was helping a customer this week set up his new PC, and he couldn't get it to talk to the printer, and he couldn't get his anti-malware installed. And I download everything normally, and I go to run it, and it says, can't be installed, can't be installed. Can't. So, what the heck? Finally figured out, it's Windows 10 S.
Oh, no.
So you can only install stuff from the App Store.
Right.
And so the only thing I could find in the App Store is McAfee and Norton for $100 a year.
Right.
Well, those are the big names, and we've frequently said that the virus writers don't release the virus until it can get past the big names.
Yeah.
So we like the little names.
The game of leapfrog keeps going on.
Right.
Although theoretically Windows 10S is slightly less susceptible because things can't be installed except from the App Store.
Right.
Slightly less.
Slightly.
But if something does get in, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. So be aware, if you're going to buy a new computer, that it doesn't come with Windows 10 S. We all know what the S stands for. Don't buy it. Let's get to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a bit of a dilemma. I'm trying to set up a digital signage system at our church. And right now I've got it going on a laptop that uses Win10. It's on Wi-Fi. The problem is Windows continually comes up trying to load something, update something, whatever. So the thing always stops. So you're constantly restarting it. And so we had thought to try to make a local server. I do have a laptop that I could put Ubuntu on and turn that into a local server. It's a PC, but I've also started to read a little bit about Apache 2 or whatever it is that comes with Apple. And I'm wondering if this one Dave may know better, if it might be worth trying to buy a used Apple laptop since it already has Apache on it and turning that into, say, a local server.
Well, Apache is a web server, and so you could write a web page to run on your remote terminals to do that type of stuff. What we have seen a lot of people do is using Raspberry Pis and just mount it to the monitor that is your screen and then run a slideshow that way.
Apache is a web server that loads on any operating system, Linux, Ubuntu. You can load it right from the apt repositories. It's right in there. It'll run on a Mac. It'll run on Windows. It'll run on a Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi, it certainly isn't something you want to put out on the internet and try to serve a million pages on. But if you're just
doing a sign.
How many screens do you want to be able to show the information on?
Right now we have 3 screens, and that's probably all we're going to have for the near future.
I should be able to do that.
I should be able to do that fine.
Well, especially Raspberry Pi for $30, you put one on each screen.
Right, you put a Raspberry Pi on each screen, and it runs a browser that goes to the server.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need 4 Raspberry Pis. So yeah, there's $120.
Okay, I shouldn't say I have one. I have one that my grandson uses, and he ain't about to give it up. So, which would be better than the Pi 3 or the Pi 4?
Pi 3 right now.
Yeah, the Pi 4 has an issue. There's a couple of issues, but one is it runs very hot. And for this application, it doesn't sound like you really need the power of a 4.
Okay.
So the 3B or the 3B Plus. The 3B Plus comes with 4 gig of RAM and
it comes with the heat sinks. Whereas the Raspberry Pi 4, more and more folks have found that they've got to get the cases with the, it's like a 1x1 fan. So you've got another device there now that's going to be running that, and the ball bearings and all that could, you know.
And the noise if it's in a church.
Yeah. You know, I mean.
Certainly for the monitors themselves, the signage itself, a Raspberry Pi 3 is fine.
Now, would it be able to do some of the fancier stuff like, you know, splitting the screen up and, say, running weather in one portion and video and that kind of stuff in the other, or would this be straight, let's say I created the signage in PowerPoint, and then I think I would need to either convert it to a video or something like that. I'm still reading, but would I be able to get multiple screens through the Raspberry Pi also?
Well, the way I think we're all envisioning it is that you have one Raspberry Pi on each monitor, and it essentially grabs the data from a fourth one, which is your server.
Oh.
So, which is why I say you need 4 Raspberry Pis at $30 a piece.
They're just technically a dumb terminal.
And you can have as many windows open on each one as you want to write for.
Right, and the complexity of the screen itself that you're sending from the server, which is also, by the way, a Raspberry Pi, the complexity of that screen is entirely up to your programmers, whoever's writing those screens, whoever's creating those screens. You can do pretty much anything you see on the internet you can do because you're just another server on the internet. You can run Apache on a Raspberry Pi 3B plus.
Now you said I can run Apache on the Raspberry Pi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just put it on the micro SD card.
Although this might be a little overkill. If you're just wanting to put like today's program and the sermon topic and the hymns we're gonna sing, you could do that with just a slideshow.
Okay, now some of it does extend the information for the month, and then each week, what's not relevant drops off, and something new comes on. But we try to keep a format so you're not always recreating the wheel.
Yeah, right. One thing I have done for several churches is they've used Apple TVs, and using home sharing slideshow feature, where it just plays a list. You put a list of pictures in a folder and it just plays those pictures, and so when one picture is out of date, you drag that out of the folder and drag the next one into the folder, and it grabs it. That would be a little more expensive for multiple screens because you'd need an Apple TV on each screen, but you could duplicate that functionality with a Raspberry Pi and either writing the software yourself or finding software to do that.
Right. Okay, well, as usual, you've given me an answer and more information than I even thought I could ask, so...
So there's two things you should...
We're going to have at it. We've got a couple of people. We're going to have at it here, and because we looked at a company called BrightSign, and boy, those boxes are expensive.
Yeah.
They do a good job, but it's just kind of more money than we wanted to expend at this point. So we're going to jump in, I guess, to the Raspberry Pi and see what we can do and learn something new.
All right, two things that you should probably look at. Steve will put up a couple of links. One, if you there's a on the RaspberryPi.org website, there's how to set up an Apache web server on the Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
There's
and
also
that's the Raspberry Pi website.
Yeah, RaspberryPi.org. But Steve's going to put up a link.
Okay.
The other one is there is actually a program for the Raspberry Pi. Cole, slideshow.
Oh, slides. Let me put that in my notes until I slide.
Wait. I think there is. Hold on. I don't know if it's available on that, but I think there is.
I'll certainly find out. Raspberry.
You can at least do a desktop picture of a slideshow, right? That's built into the OS.
Right. Yeah. You can do that as the screensaver. There's also a...
But like you said, Steve, if he creates a folder... And just has that program access the folder.
Yeah, look at that folder on that fourth Raspberry Pi server as here's the source of
and
the pictures.
That way
show.
You can drag pictures in and out if you do up the code so it reads all those files in that folder. That way you could pull out and put in other slides, updates, whether it's to the program, what events are coming up, say for May, say March, and then April,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple.
What I'm trying to do.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to do it. There's a program called FEH. You can create a slideshow screen. Anyway, there are ways to do it, and it sounds like it would be a real fun project to play with.
Right,
definitely.
Okay, so I guess I'll first thing we'll start doing is looking at Raspberry Pi and how we can get that going. And because I'd like to have something like this on each individual screen and not have to worry about the internet going down or this, that, and the third not working or Windows coming up constantly trying to do something and just interrupting the whole process.
And that's the other thing, Larry. With the Raspberry Pis, you have the advantage they are wireless. So, they can all talk within your internet.
Right.
Okay.
The other thing that you... Yes, and you can do it one of two ways. You buy four pies and serve everything from the fourth one, or you buy three pies, and every time you need to change it, you bring in a laptop, you connect to it, you upload those things to the right directory. Either way will work, and it doesn't matter which you use, just one is a little less time.
Okay, so I guess my mindset was buy three Raspberry Pis, use a laptop to update it, and move on.
Perfect.
Yep.
That will absolutely work.
Okay, I knew I would get an answer from you guys, That's why I'm a member.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Answers are a given. Correct answers are you have to pay more for.
Right.
I'm getting a JavaScript error trying to load the plugin on the website.
They're actually working on the website. They're working on the whole server because there are a couple of issues from yesterday, so they're fixing them today. We may have some a few small issues at various points this morning. There are screensaver things to do that you can use. So it sounds like it would be a fun little project to get involved in, actually.
And I've also been hearing a lot of ads on podcasts I listen to for a website called Captera, which is a comparison site where you put in the type of software you're looking for, and it gives you a whole list of programs, and you see reviews from people, and it's completely free to use. And they just started advertising on a lot of podcasts because I've heard it on several of them. So I looked for digital signage software, and it found 266 programs. And you can limit it to free programs, free trials, subscriptions, what OS it runs under, how many people you want it to run under.
So that's nice.
It's pretty interesting. Captera with two R's.
It's a lot like Alternative2.net.
Yeah, it's an open source, not necessarily open source. It's an open community of people that review software. They say they have millions of reviews of all sorts of different software.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got an old Acer portable. It's about 10 years old. I love it. But it runs Windows 7. And I'd like to put Linux version on a flash drive, run it so that I can learn about it before I wipe out all my Windows stuff.
Sure.
I read up about it a little, maybe not enough, but I used Rufus to try to make a bootable flash drive. Eventually found out you can't use Lexer or PNY flash drives. And then I tried to download Kubuntu 19.1. I think that's a little too robust for what I want to do. So I'm wondering, what's a good version of Linux or Unix to use on this? It's only got a 3 meg memory. And how do I get... I just can't seem to get over this ability to make a boot drive.
Yeah, okay. There are a couple of things. First, does this old Acer have a CD writer?
I believe it does, yes.
In that case, you can make a bootable CD using Nero or any one of a dozen other software programs. You don't have to do it on a flash drive.
Okay.
As for which Ubuntu, I'd take 18.10 maybe, or 18.09 I think is what it is. There's also generally, I think there's still two versions. The 32-bit version and the 64-bit version.
Okay, I'm a 64-bit, it tells me.
Yeah. If you've only got 3 gig of RAM, you could really use either. Well, that's interesting. I see, I misspelled it. Well, that would explain it.
Yeah, you can go to weird places by misspelling things.
Ain't that the truth? So at Ubuntu, I'm just trying to figure out what the latest versions are. Yeah. Download. Thank you very much. Ubuntu desktop. Can you do me a favor and stay on the line?
Sure.
Yeah, we got to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rick from Pittsford, and me, Nick Francesco. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rick from Pittsford, New York, still on the line. You there, Rick?
I'm still here.
Okay, so, 1804 1910 is the latest version, but I recommend the 1804 LTS version. LTS means long-term support. 1910 is kind of the bleeding edge version. I don't recommend that for beginners.
Okay. I looked on my CD drive. I don't know that it can actually write. It says it's a DVD/CD-ROM drive.
Yeah, maybe not. So you can absolutely use Rufus. There is a guide on the Ubuntu.com website.
Okay.
So if you go to Ubuntu.com and click on the download menu choice, you can click the little green 1804 LTS for Ubuntu desktop. And then underneath that, you'll see tutorials for burning a DVD and creating a bootable USB stick on Ubuntu, Mac OS, and Windows.
Okay. What if I wanted to buy a commercial version to read it from the drive? What would you recommend for this one?
Who still makes those?
Red Hat. That's probably the big commercial one.
Yeah.
Although I would imagine a big commercial distribution would have a big commercial price.
Yeah, they'll certainly charge you for that. The other thing that you might do is find a friend with a...
That's the wrong Red Hat.
Yeah. the other thing you might do is find a friend with a burner and have them burn a copy for you.
All right, yeah, I can try that.
Which might be easier, but...
Yeah. So redhat.com will $300 for a Red Hat workstation.
Oh, well, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your assistance.
Well, thanks. Good luck with that. You'll I tell you the truth, you'll love Ubuntu, you'll love Linux. It's a lot of fun. You can buy hello. You can get the official Ubuntu 18.04 Linux DVD for $10 plus shipping from Amazon.
I'm sorry, where was that from?
Amazon.
Oh, okay.
In fact, yeah, so just search for Ubuntu. Well, what I did was I did a Google search for buy Ubuntu on DVD. And lo and behold, the first thing was an Amazon link.
Great.
From Linux Freak.
From Linux Freak. It's perfectly legal to do that, to create a disk and sell it to people. You're not charging them for Linux. You're charging them for the DVD and time and shipping.
Yep.
So in terms of that, make sure you get the 1804 official 64-bit yada, yada, yada. Beyond that, you should be fine.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
It looks like the USB versions are more expensive, but USB would be faster than DVD.
Right, right. Well, they're charging you for that USB.
For that drive itself,
yeah,
too.
You can buy it either way. That'd be fine.
Oh, here's one of Debian and Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
All sorts of fun stuff on online these days.
Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Honeoy Falls, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have is I have updated, I think it was Windows 7. It brings in the new updates. And I had a fantastic printer that has since gone offline. Any way to get this thing back running again? It'll print out partials on the print, but not everything.
Well, the first thing is to determine whether or not it's the printer or Windows itself. And the way you do that is print from something else, your phone, your tablet.
If the printer has its own self-test page.
Or if the printer has its own self-test page, you print that out. If it's the driver, then you have to get it from whoever the printer was. Windows 7, of course, is long dead,
yeah.
And you're only getting a few updates, not all of them. If one of those updates killed your printer driver, perhaps reinstalling it will fix that. If not, you can hope that whoever made your printer still has a Windows 7 driver online.
Okay, well, but I've updated to Windows 10, and that's when the printer started getting weird.
I didn't understand that.
I'm sorry.
It is likely then that what happened was the printer driver did not update correctly.
Yep.
So now you go to the printer manufacturer's well, the first thing you should probably do is completely remove the printer from Windows 10.
Use Revo Uninstaller to uninstall it.
Right.
Uninstall? Okay.
Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
Because that gets...
Similar to doing the update on Windows Update in the settings? Or am I in the wrong spot?
You're in kind of the wrong spot. What you want to find is your devices.
Devices,
and
okay.
Under devices, you'll find that printer and just... remove it entirely.
That remove the device, but maybe in the control panel under programs and features,
yep.
See if did you say it was an HP printer?
It is.
Look for anything HP. Wow, do you have an HP computer too, by any chance? Look for anything in there that says HP and uninstall it.
Oh, okay.
If you have an HP computer, then there could be.
Then
stuff,
there's a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of stuff
you don't want to delete
uninstall.
Them.
Yeah.
No, it's actually an Asus, if that matters.
Right. Okay, then what you can do is completely uninstall the printer and then let Windows 10 find it again, and it should download the correct driver. What we see a lot is that Windows 7 updated to Windows 10, again, the great quality control of Microsoft, it often doesn't correctly update drivers.
Sure, okay.
So
is another option to uninstall the updates on the actual machine, the printer, but on the computer?
That's kind of the nuclear option.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Yeah, it's a little.
It's either that or take a sledgehammer to it. It's easier, I think, to just uninstall the printer and reinstall it again.
I like it. Okay, sounds good.
Okay, there you go. Good luck, Jim.
And okay, well, thanks for your help. You guys are the best. Appreciate everything.
Thanks. Bye bye. Thank you.
We got to take off a nougat from orbit. That's the only way to be sure.
Only way to be sure.
All right,
Jim is that guy that we see on Facebook where he's burned his house down to get a spider.
Yeah.
We have somebody that texted in and it says, "Can a Raspberry Pi be used on a TV as a media server to play, say, video files like?" MKV, MP4, and audio files like MP3. Simple answer, yes.
Absolutely, yes.
It's great for that.
Yeah, I've got my Raspberry Pi connected to my television, and in fact, I backed a system on, what's the thing you back stuff on? Not Indiegogo, the other one.
Kickstarter,
and they sent a 1 hour movie file, which I watched off my Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, yep.
It works great. Again, for those sorts of things, you want the higher end Raspberry Pi, and you don't want to be running a lot else while you're doing it.
The 3B plus
would be better with 4 gig of RAM,
mm-hmm.
The slightly faster processor. I know people who say, "Well, the Raspberry Pi is too slow." And you see what they're doing, and they're running Apache and MySQL and 16 other things simultaneously. Well, it is not your desktop computer.
Yeah. Hello, you're talking about a $50 item.
Right, right.
And that's the Raspberry Pi and case.
Right, right. And power supply and everything else. So yeah, if what you're using it for is something like watching a movie, then make sure it's pretty much the only thing running.
Yeah.
But it will do it just fine in high definition. It has HDMI out, so you can do a regular HDMI connection, as I did, and it works perfectly.
I have also seen that many of the network-attached storage drives, a NAS, basically a hard drive with an Ethernet port, they often come with a media server built in. Part of having a Raspberry Pi as a media server is you need a hard drive to store the media on.
Right.
And so having a hard drive with a little computer and media server already built in may be a little easier to set up. But the Raspberry Pi is more than capable of doing that. And
yeah,
then plug a big hard drive into the USB port for your storage.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen folks now, they'll take a Raspberry Pi and then they strap or Velcro an external hard drive on top of it. And then they can do, like Larry was talking about, doing slideshows or everything else.
Oh, the other thing that our texter should be aware of is that there are, on a Raspberry Pi 3, there are USB 3.0 ports. And USB 3 is much faster and better. So you want a device, you want a storage device that does USB 3 and then plug it into the USB 3 port. And then it's fast enough to do pretty much anything you want to do. So, yeah, you can very easily, in fact, use the Raspberry Pi as a media server. With a few caveats.
Yeah.
But you can certainly do it, and it works pretty well.
I've been playing with the Raspberry Pis now for about, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And I've had more fun with them. And, I've got one that I can sit there through my wireless, and I take it out to the garage, and if I want to listen to music,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've got it set up there, just put a bunch of songs on it, and I can sit there and play my songs
right
out there, you know, and it's just this little box, and, you know, it takes a whole 5 watts.
I've got a project sitting in my queue, which I haven't gotten to, of course. The queue's about, you know, I got to live to be 153 to get at everything in the queue, but one of them is to set up a old-time radio server for my wife so she can just connect with her phone and listen to whatever she wants. So that'll be next. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I have a question, a curiosity question, and then I'd like to just make a comment about the gentleman with Ubuntu you were talking about.
Yeah.
But let me ask the question first. I installed MX Linux 19-0.1, and it came with Linux kernel 4.19. The laptop would hang up, so I went over to their bugs, found out that they recommended that I drop down to kernel 4.9.
Yeah.
It works, except the interesting part is that when I look at the menu to choose, I get two versions of the kernel to look at, one running with systemd. The other one, if I go on it, shows that the laptop is connected to the Internet, but I cannot run or Firefox can't do anything, can't find any server. But if I use the one that uses systemd, it will. Everything runs fine. It runs, connects fine. It'll shut down fine, etc. Can you give me an idea why that is?
Okay. So systemd is not really just one program. It's a whole suite of programs.
Yeah.
And it's a series of system components for Linux, and it's a service manager. And what it does is it essentially connects drivers to the operating system. And so clearly whatever driver you're using to connect to your wireless card is in fact a systemd compatible component.
Okay.
And will not run without systemd running.
Okay. Because it's interesting, I had no problem connecting with it when I was running kernel 4.19, and it, you know, without systemd, and it was fine. But once I put in 4.9 without systemd, it would not, Firefox would go nowhere. So, okay, well, that explains that.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Going with the gentleman, though, that you call up about his laptop and you said Ubuntu, well, I think he said he had just a CD reader. So, therefore, any use of DVDs would be a problem to him, wouldn't it?
Well, he said it was a CD-DVD device, but he didn't think it was writable. That was the thing.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
No, that's
I
okay.
I apologize. And the other place he could look at for other ones, which I've turned to before, is like distrowatch.com.
Yep.
Then he can go through advanced search, and then he could find stuff that's for like beginners, old computers, 32-bit, you know, size of the media, all that good stuff. So he might find something there. He could choose from the beginners and really find an easy one to work with.
Yep, it's a long. He's starting on a long journey.
Yes, he is.
And of course, he just missed the Linux workshop.
Oh, geez.
Which happens once a month. But, yeah, there's lots of people you can talk to, lots of places you can go.
And it just struck me as maybe some of the books you can buy would come with a Linux CD in the book.
Yes, that's true.
That's true, too. That's absolutely true. Good thought.
Okay. Well, I'll not take up any more of your time. Thank you very much for explaining about the System D. I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Walter. Have fun.
You too.
Linux has moved to System D, but not everybody got the memo, I guess.
I still like System C. I can't wait for System E.
I'll send you System F.
All right, we've got another person that texted in and says, "Hey, gents, any chance your caller looking for Linux on USB or CD can use a copy/version that comes with the various Linux SINZES found at Barnes & Noble?
Magazines.
E-zines.
Yeah, books and magazines often come with a disk or USB drive.
Good thought. Yeah. Excellent thought. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't think of it, because I don't use them anymore myself. That's why. There's still monthly publications for Linux, and Barnes and Noble is gone, but Borders
is,
one of them is still gone and the other one's still there. But if you go down to there, you should be able to find one of the monthly magazines that still has a DVD in it. And often they have multiple versions of Linux.
Yeah.
So you can give multiple versions a try.
I remember a year or two ago, was it one of the entertainment magazines came with a cell phone with the screen pointing out, and one of the movie studios had an ad for a movie running on the cell phone screen. And since it was a live cell phone, they could update the ad.
Nice.
And there were people that took that magazine and tore it apart, tear apart of a magazine, to pull the cell phone off and figure out what it is and
how it works.
How it worked, yeah. And it was like a $5 cell phone board with a $3 LCD on it. And a SIM card that would only receive data.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
Very cool.
All right, we've got another person that just texted in. It says, "Hi, you mentioned Windows 10S earlier. I have just ordered an HP Envy 17-inch with Windows 10 Pro installed. Do I have to worry about being stuck with the S version?"
No, theoretically not. If it says Windows 10 Pro, then you should get Windows. If you do get Windows 10S, then sue them.
Yeah, yeah, you've got a case for an good case for an.
Yeah, there's S, and then there's Home, and then there's Pro.
Right.
I don't think they do Ultimate anymore, do they?
No, I don't think they do any of that stuff anymore. Pro really is only necessary if you're on a corporate network.
Yeah,
really.
Need to
home
connect.
Version's fine.
Yeah, the Pro can connect to a Microsoft domain. So if you have a domain controller you need to connect to, then you need Pro.
Right.
Which S, most homes don't.
Yeah, S is a starter version or simplified version.
Stupid version.
It can only install apps from the Microsoft App Store. That can work if all you ever want are apps that are in the App Store. But if you want to run any arbitrary app, then you need at least Windows 10 Home. Right. We're sort of seeing that a little bit on the Mac side, where Apple has their App Store as well. But developers can also sign their apps, so you can download an app outside the App Store and still run it. When Apple started this technology they call Gatekeeper, as a way to try to prevent rogue apps from getting into your computer, a lot of people were starting to get nervous about this option, that eventually Apple would make it so you have to use the App Store to install apps. So far, you still can also install apps from certified developers. And we have seen cases where a rogue developer gets a certification and is able to put a real malicious app in the App Store that when it's found, it's removed.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help a little bit in stopping the drive-by downloads and the rogue apps from getting into your machine, because now they have to
and
be signed.
And that was the point behind S.
Yeah.
To make it secure. That's what the S actually stands for.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it stood for anytime you want to put anything else on it other than out of the
you
app
can't.
Store, you're
yeah.
S.
You're screwed. Exactly. It's supposed to stand for secure. Because you can't install
from
anything
from Microsoft.
Except, yeah, well, yeah,
that's an oxymoron.
Well, most secure that version comes, ever.
Right, right. Well, that's which is a
and
low
I
bar.
Got, yeah. And I got some swampland for you too.
Well, the idea, the point is, as Steve pointed out, every app store can have an issue.
Yeah.
Where a malicious app gets in. So the fact that you can only download things from the Windows Store doesn't mean anything.
Mm-mm.
And it does completely limit you. You know, it comes down to that argument. Is it your machine or is it somebody else's machine? I run Ubuntu. I run Linux because I want it to be my machine. If I screw it up, that's on me.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to run something, that's on me. And so, yeah, but some people like the security. And so Windows 10S, you know, they're so plain vanilla. They're never going to run anything out of the ordinary. That's almost never the sort of person who listens to sound bites.
You should sit there then and definitely go for a Chromebook. One, you don't pay for an operating system. You don't get updates that are going to crash it. And you can get things from the Google Store. Use apps on your Chromebook that work fine.
Yep.
There is no reason to go get a Windows S machine.
The sort of person who listens to sound bites is often, not always, but often the person who's doing something just a little out of the ordinary. Just a little bit. But even so, the average person really generally needs nothing more than a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
If what you do is email and web browsing, you know, basically everything you do is could be done on the web, a Chromebook is for you. The newer Chromebooks let you do all kinds of stuff off the web. I'm running Linux on my Chromebook. You can do that now with the newer Chromebooks. I can do SSHing into other systems through my Chromebook. I just did that this morning, as a matter of fact.
But even further than that, though, like I said, the apps, they still give you the capabilities, whether you want to listen to music, whether you want to edit photos. I mean, there's 10-to-1 odds an app out there that will serve the purpose of some programs that you're running on your computer.
There's a website called dirtylaunch.com, and it's a guy who's talking about how to launch a business, okay? But many of his apps talk about Chromebooks. It's time to switch to a Chromebook, level up your audio with Auphonic, which is a online audio editor, online easy online meetings with Werby, and he only owns a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
So everything he talks about is something that you can do. So you want to do online meetings? Chromebook. You want to level up your audio? Chromebook. You know, all of that stuff all works directly through the Chromebook itself. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but I know you. You're a slow learner, so you're going to want to do it again. Well, good news. We've got a whole nother hour of this nonsense coming your way. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. We're going to take a little bio break. Maybe you should too, but come back and join us for a whole lot more mayhem. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we have been able to remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Van Ray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we do anything else, I'm going to read another news item.
Yep. Then we got, like I told you, I got it.
Okay. Yeah, I did. Okay. But in the meantime, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. But we need it all to be aware. Apple on Monday became one of the first companies to reveal how COVID-19, the coronavirus that has gripped China, was affecting its business, saying it was cutting its sales expectations for this quarter, which a month ago it had projected to be robust. Apple, which is highly dependent on Chinese factories and Chinese consumers, well, we're all dependent on Chinese factories these days, said in a statement that its supply of smartphones would be hampered because production was ramping up much more slowly than expected as China reopened its factories. Apple also said that demand for its devices in China had been hurt by the outbreak. It closed all 42 of its stores in the country last month, and most have yet to reopen. Work is starting to resume around the country, but we are experiencing a slower return to normal conditions than we had anticipated, said an Apple spokesrobot. Many global firms rely on factories in China to manufacture goods as varied as socks and laptop computers, and Chinese consumers who had ridden a wave of rising wealth had been avid buyers of iPhones and many other items. Fears over COVID-19's impact on the global economy and business have been growing. As of yesterday morning in China, more than 75,000 people had been infected by COVID-19, and over 2,200 had died worldwide. About 750 million people in China are under some kind of lockdown orders. Apple's action on Monday is the first of many we're going to see around COVID-19's impact. Apple is heavily exposed. It confirms the worst fears that the iPhone impact was going to be more dramatic than expected. Think there's no COVID-19 impact on you? Guess again. And give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And in fact, you can even text us. The number is on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Just go there, and at the upper right, you'll see the two phone numbers I just gave and the text number at 585-209-9010. Get it? 9010?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay, and that text message is?
All right, this is a long one. All right, I wish they'd put their name in it. But anyways, I'm assuming this is a gentleman. He goes, have three Chromebooks. Wife's five-year-plus HP MV17 stopped working on Wi-Fi this past week. Wife has a Chromebook and hates it. Won't use it, period. And that's explanatory. Period. Solution is to replace it with something she is familiar with and slightly less hostile towards. New machine.
That's why I didn't mention his name.
That's true. A good point. New machine was on sale directly from HP and was only $100 more than the original unit, which didn't have Pro, which I had to put on it to work with the house network. New box has 16 gig of memory versus 12, 1 terabyte versus another terabyte. And since she's paying for it, no problem.
No problem. The bottom line is buy what makes you happy. Buy what you can afford that makes you happy. That's absolutely true.
But the other key factor?
Yeah.
If mama's not happy,
ain't nobody
gonna be happy. So yes, if that's what she wants, here's the key words. Yes, dear.
Yes. Four words you have to know if you're gonna be married. Yes, dear, you're right. That's really all there is.
It's, go for it, honey.
That's all you need. Go
and
for
smile.
It. Smile. That's the perfect idea, dear. Let's buy you that. And that's absolutely true. We talk about what people need, but also there's what people want. There's what people not just need, but are comfortable with. And if you're comfortable with a Mac, get another Mac. If you're comfortable with a PC, get another PC.
Well, we ran into that with people with even just simple things like keyboards.
Yep.
Simple thing. Some people like the click. Others like just a soft touch. Again, that's why way back over 20 years ago, we're telling folks to go to these stores and test drive.
Yeah.
Because
it's harder now. There are a few stores.
Exactly. But the thing of it is, though, is you've got to go do your research.
Yep.
Don't, you know, do a search and say, laptops on sale. Take the time to go through at least 5-6 different ones with different options. And take the time to look them over and do a list. Quite often on a lot of these sites, you can select them and compare them.
Yep.
And compare one model versus this model versus that model and the different features. And see what you want, what you can really need. And, oh, yeah, this would be a nice extra. Again, also entering in is the price factor.
Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, they're all things that you got to take the time and do, though. And so many folks are just, oh, so I saw this one. And if they had gone, you know, and done a little more work, and I've had this happen to a couple folks. Yeah, I saw this other one. I probably could have saved about $300-$400, but I didn't know it.
Right.
Or, well, take
or they tell you that they just want to surf the web and read their email. And so, you know, they get a low-end computer, and then they come back complaining that it won't play their first-person shooter game.
Right.
No, it won't.
No, it won't, because you never said that.
Yeah.
The other thing, of course, is that people – I always tell people what's your – when people say, what should I buy, Mac, Windows, what should I – who's your support group?
Yeah.
If your support group is all Mac people, do not buy a Windows computer.
We've said that for 30 years.
Right. If your support group is Windows, do not buy a Mac. I don't care how sexy it is. You're going to be frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind being frustrated, buy whatever you want and ignore your support group. But if everybody you would depend on to help you has a Mac, don't buy Windows.
Yeah.
It really is that easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whoever you're going to go to for help, take the recommendation on what to buy.
And that has not changed in all the years that we've been doing this show.
Ever. But people still forget it.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Because it's the simplest thing.
Right.
And they think it can't be that easy.
And some people do not want to change ever. I get it. I if you're going to buy a Chromebook, you are going to be involved in change. That's mm-hmm. just life, and it's okay. A lot of people like the challenge. A lot of people like the ability to do that. I know people who have bought exactly the same brand of car for 35 years and get angry when the dashboard changes.
Yeah, they've moved the buttons around.
They move stuff.
Yeah.
I absolutely get that. I truly do. But it's like we've always said. Buying a new computer is like buying a new car. Takes you a couple of days to figure out where the buttons are, but then you forget you never didn't know.
Yeah, they're still there. They just moved them around.
That's right.
Windows has done the same thing.
That's exactly
right. Just when you learn where something is.
That's why Windows 8 was such a horrible disaster.
Along with a couple other
versions.
Well,
yeah. But the reality is that Microsoft tried to force everybody, thinking, we're the big dog.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to force everybody into a new paradigm. Yeah. Ain't happening.
It's a touchscreen OS, and no one has touchscreens
yet. No one has touchscreens. Oh, yeah, that.
I wonder what part of marketing came up, genius, if he's still even employed with Microsoft, came up with that.
Probably put in charge of a division now.
Probably.
But yeah, you have to be aware that these things are not as plug and play as we think they are. There's always, particularly you buy a new product, a new piece of software, somebody does an update to something and it changes where the buttons are. I know people who go crazy if their icons are moved on their desktop. They literally cannot do anything now.
Remember Paula Chapman?
I love Paula.
Yeah. I wonder if, remember, she used to work used for to, Microsoft. Yeah, I don't know did. If she still is.
No, I don't think she does it.
That's who it was. Steven Sanofsky. I had his name wrong. He was in charge of Windows 8.
Oh, Steven Sanofsky.
He's not there anymore.
He's not there.
Surprise.
Yeah. I love Paula.
Just like a lot of other features in Windows. Not there anymore.
Not there anymore, exactly right. But yeah, we used to see that when I was at RIT. Doing tech support, not just for Saunders, but when I was doing it for the entire university, institute at that time, we'd have people come in and say something's wrong with my computer because their desktop background changed.
Mm-hmm.
Quite literally, they didn't understand where anything was anymore. It was all different. And I get that. It's just the way people are.
I had one of those the other day where they had scrolled the window to the right a little.
Yeah.
So you couldn't see the beginning of the file names.
Yep.
Oh, my God, what happened? What's wrong? How do I get back to where I was? You still are where you were. Just scroll back the other way. Yeah. Yeah. You didn't see when you scrolled it? No, apparently not.
No, I get that. I do get that. The other day, my cat, who likes to sleep on my keyboard if you follow me on Facebook, did something to my keyboard, and suddenly it was zoomed out like six.
And that's like a six-keystroke chain of events. It has to be done perfectly. And he's only got four legs.
Yes. And so I moved her off the keyboard, but then, it's been so long since she did it before that it took me a while to remember what to do, but at least I knew what I was doing.
Did you write it down?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
At our age, we have to.
Oh, at our age, yeah. Assuming we remember how to write.
I just throw it into Google Docs.
Yeah.
I have, seriously.
Google Keep. I do everything in Google Keep now.
A number of stuff is in Google Keep. Like all my pills that I have to take. I love it because I got Keep on my phone. So whenever you go to the doctors, and they're always asking you, all right, what pills are you taking? Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a clever idea. I says, it's a lot easier than me trying to remember.
That's exactly right. I do the same thing. I have all of that written down in Google Keep so that if anybody needs to know it, it's there.
Yeah. And, anything else, other passwords or key codes that I might need to get into a building and that type of stuff, the number is there. They don't know if anybody was to get my phone, they wouldn't know what it was for. But I do because of the colors.
Right.
I do it by color code, which is something that I remember. I can just pull that up. Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Yep.
And do it. But it's great. And again, once you register, it's in there. And it's just sort of like that key fob thing, too. Now, with a key card, you can put all those little fobs that, for this store and that store. I had my wife do that a while back because she had these keychains, two of them, one ring next to the other.
Yeah.
And they're all loaded up with these stupid fobs.
But you can put all those fobs into your phone now.
Yeah, you can scan them and put them in. She goes, really? Yeah, look at this is what I did. Well, what about this one? It's in there.
Yeah.
What about this one? It's in there.
Yep. A lot of people use their cell phone as a second factor without realizing that SMS text messages have no security.
Right.
And it's very easy to spoof a cell phone number. And so more and more companies are moving to either Google Authenticator or Apple's Authenticator, the YubiKey Authenticator. There are hardware authenticators that are safer than using a text message. We're hearing somebody just did a report. It was on Security Now. Study of the largest cell phone carriers and how easy it was to spoof a SIM. Because you call up the customer service representative and say, I'm Nick, and I lost my phone. I need you to send me a new SIM card. And they go, okay.
Yeah, that's
pretty much.
Yeah.
Because they're customer service reps. They want to service
their
customers.
Keep the customer happy.
And
in fact, they couldn't say, let me text you two-factor authentication because my phone is gone.
Yeah. They'll ask what's the last number that called you? The bad guy will make a phone call to the victim's phone, and so their call ID shows up on the phone. Yeah, my mom called me. Her number is XXX. You know.
Yeah.
And so the companies that did even the minimal amount of verification, it was all easily spoofed verification.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the bottom line was, it's very easy to spoof a cell phone. It's very easy to do a SIM jacking, they call it, where someone hijacks your SIM card. So now every text message and every phone call you get goes to someone else, too.
Well, that's why I love on my Pixel the feature to, I see a phone number come up. And it's not in my contacts list. Yep. I just sit there and say, screen it. And it throws it out.
Call screening is the best thing.
Likely spam.
and it'll put that down there. I just say, yeah, it is. Boom. Marks it. Gone. But
and the same thing with text messages. I got a text message the other day. I opened it up, and right at the top, Google was saying, this is likely spam. Should I let it go through, or do you want to report it? I clicked the report it button, came back and said, do you want to block this? Yes, I do.
Yep.
Done.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really, really nice feature. And of course, Google is building those lists all the time from they essentially are crowdsourcing those lists.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that Google has done over the years, which is so smart. Why is the Google Assistant so much better at voice recognition than Amazon or anybody or the Samsung products? Because they crowdsourced voices. When they gave away voicemail to anybody who wanted it, they did say, what we'd like you to do is help us train. Yep. You didn't have to, but millions of people around the planet would say, oh, what this actually says is blah, 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 blah. And they would correct it. So they had millions of people training their voice recognition AI. Mm-hmm. That's why nowadays it works so doggone well.
Yep.
In multiple accents and multiple everything.
Yeah. So. And then even if you have a slight cold.
Yeah.
It'll, before it had to be right on or forget it.
Yep.
No.
Except unless you're Scottish.
Scottish. Well, they didn't have a lot of people in Scotland who helped fix the software. So they've got nobody to blame but themselves. Simple enough.
Yep.
But it's a very long, very involved process to train a system for voice recognition. So when millions of people are doing it, it goes a lot faster, it goes a lot deeper, and it goes a lot better. So clearly, there's somebody smart at Google who said, "Yeah, why don't we let everybody else do it for us?"
Speaking of speaking different languages and computers, one of the last few code talkers just passed away.
Yeah,
saw that because I watched that movie and I read a couple of the books on it, and that was really remarkable.
Yep,
how they were able to, pull that off for that many years, and not ever get caught or detected or anything, and never got broken.
Because it technically wasn't a code, it was a language.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just didn't know it. That was wild.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. It was very, very cool. But
just
those are the kinds of things. That's why in Google Docs, when you do voice typing, it works so very well.
Oh,
because it understands people. Now, if you're the sort of person who mumbles, or you're trying to do it from the microphone in the laptop instead of having earbuds on, you'll have an issue.
Yep,
that's just life. It's not magic. If you're the sort of person where everybody's always going, what? And they're not all deaf, then you're still going to have an issue. But if you speak fairly plainly and or rather fairly clearly
and you have a headset, not,
not a lot of ums and not a lot of turning your head so that you're talking, and then all of a sudden you're out over here somewhere, and then you're back in here.
Yeah.
That, you know, and if you've got a headset on with a microphone, with
right there in your front of your face, you know, and they're relatively inexpensive. I mean, you can get a $20 set that'll, you know, be sufficient enough. I mean, you don't have to have stereo quality.
Right.
And it plugs right into the front of the machine.
Right.
Most of them. And
well, they have USB connectors now.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have one for my Chromebooks. So on days when my arthritis is really, really bad and I've got some correspondence to send out, I do it through that.
I've been doing, like I said, I was doing this thing up for the Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working at the keyboard on the one computer, and I had Google Docs going on my little Chromebook, and I was dictating into it what I wanted, you know, the steps to be as I was going through it. And it made it great because, every so often I just look over, yeah, let's do it, keeping up with me. So I was able to talk, you know, all right, and then from here I go to this directory, blah, blah. And it was following right along with me. And like you said, you just got to be right into the mic there in front of you. And that's the advantage of is having the headset with the mic there. Even if you do turn your head,
it goes with you.
It goes with you. You're not turning away from a mic like we do here in the studio. Yep. So it
and
is
and that's
helpful.
Not to say, you know, it's not the original Battlestar Galactica where it put in the, although they're working on it. They're working on punctuation.
What they've come up with just in the years as that well. We've been doing this show.
Right.
How advanced it is.
But right now it works very much like you were dictating to a stenographer.
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Smith, comma, new paragraph.
Yep.
Right. So, yes, you go through that or you clean it up later.
Yeah.
But it works and it works.
Oh, so much better than the old days of Dragon Dictate. Oh, that was painful for you folks that aren't old enough to remember or never got into
old enough and therefore don't remember.
Yeah. But Dragon Dictate, you had to sit there and teach it. And you could spend a lot of time.
Hours reading to it.
And your punctuation and everything, and your enunciation.
They put stuff up on the screen for you to read.
Yeah, and then, God help you, if you got a cold or anything else, if you had allergies and all of a sudden that kicked in.
Or the acoustics in the room changed.
Yeah. Oh, that would all affect it.
There was a Apple Cider meeting ages and ages ago. I won't mention the person's name, but they brought in a voice recognition system. And we got there early, and it got all set up, and he tested it and managed it and did all the stuff, you know. And he said, computer, turn on the light. And the computer would say, turn on the light, master? And he would say, yes, and the light would turn on. And it worked perfectly, and then 200 people came into the hall and changed the acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing worked. The entire thing, nothing worked. It was hysterically bad. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I don't know which of these is funnier. I like this one better.
All right.
On January 14th, Microsoft pulled the plug on Windows 7. no matter what you think is happening in Windows 7, it's dead. Closing the chapter on what was one of the closing the chapter on what was one of the most popular operating systems in the world. Even though Windows 7 has reached end of life, the operating system is still used by millions around the world. Ever since Microsoft decided to end the support for Windows 7, several groups have been asking the company to release the source code of Windows 7 to allow independent developers to work and provide support to the existing users. A couple of weeks back, an online petition was circulated demanding Microsoft open source Windows 7. The petition was written by Greg Farrow, campaigns manager at the Free Software Foundation. The petition gained a lot of traction from Windows 7 fans, and it had more than 13,000 signatures. Now that the petition has closed, Free Software Foundation has sent the signatures, along with an empty hard drive, to Microsoft. The foundation wants Microsoft to copy the source code of Windows 7, along with the license notice, onto the drive and send it back. Not only that, but the foundation has also offered Microsoft to help with the transfer of the code. Subtly suggesting they don't have any engineers who can move code from one drive to another.
Yeah.
While honoring the request would be a great opportunity for Microsoft to show how much they care about open source, nobody expects Microsoft to actually respond. Microsoft has been selling Windows 7 ESU to organizations, and the company is still making decent money from it. Enterprise, I forget what the ESU stands for, but Microsoft is still supporting Windows 7, and they continue to update it if you pay a lot of money,
boatload.
I think it's $50 per computer this year,
right?
$100 per computer next year, $200 per computer the year after that, doubling every year.
Right, doubling every year, and I forget what the minimum number of computers is, but it isn't two.
Yeah.
Moreover, Microsoft still uses pieces of Windows 7 code in Windows 10, so it'll be a bit risky for the company to reveal the source code of those components. So should Microsoft open source Windows 7? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Or they turn around and use all the code from Windows 7 with some updates and label it 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah, they get a billion people to buy it. A billion.
Yeah, I mean, if it's, oh, well, we went back to give you that old look, and they just sit there and polish Windows 7 with the updates and the patches and the fixes and everything else, which they can easily do because it is tied into 10 and labeled 11. With 7, you get 11.
7, you get 11. There you go. It is unlikely. One of the reasons that people like open source software like Linux and the Chromebook OS is because a million people look at the code.
Yep.
So it is less prone to problems Windows. It's not unprone to problems, but less prone
to problems. But like you said, though, and you've said this for a long time, though, is with your Linux and Unix and that type of stuff. If there was a problem, it was probably fixed an hour ago.
Yep.
The person that found the problem usually writes the code to fix the problem.
Yep, yeah. That's exactly right.
And then it says, I found
this problem and here's the fix at the same time.
They do the same thing because you got folks, they have a vested interest in it.
Right. And every once in a while, you know, somebody always brings up to me, well, look, they just found this 10-year-old security issue in Linux.
Wasn't Heartbleed like that?
Yeah. And the point is nobody looked at that code for 10 years. Now there's people who are actively going through the code nobody's looked at for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see a lot less of that. But, that's one of the things is that people are constantly checking the code for problems. New eyes, lots of eyeballs. And the other thing is people are always making updates. So Linus Torvalds, who created Linux, really doesn't do a lot of coding anymore. What he spends his day doing is arbitrating, saying, this is a good patch, it should be in. This is a great patch, but it really, it's not ever going to be in the kernel. If you want to release it as a separate patch yourself, that's your business, but we're not going to put it in the kernel. But that's what he does. And he does fixes, he does updates, and he's got a quality assurance level. Well, it's not just him. It's a whole bunch of people.
Right, a team of people.
Right, it's a team of people. But he's got a quality assurance level that he will not drop below, and that's why Linux, you see so few problems comparatively in Linux, and it's why updates don't kill the machine.
And it's no big deal. You know, like you say, they're on it so fast.
Yeah, and they're on it so fast.
It doesn't have a chance to become an issue.
Right.
To where all of a sudden, they're, you know, you see it on national news that, oh, this got out and totally crippled all the machines and everything else. And, oh, Microsoft, who knew of this problem 3 months ago or 6 months ago, is finally getting around to fixing it now.
Right. And as we were saying earlier, one of the things that Microsoft has done is every version of Linux since NT has used the same basic underlying code. What they've mainly changed is the front end. And consequently, if Microsoft were to release the operating system to open source, it would in fact be major parts of Windows 10. Because there isn't that much change to the underlying OS from 7 to 10.
10, yeah.
It's really probably not ever going to happen.
Like I say, they're missing the boat. They could relabel it, make a few changes, put it back to Windows 7, and back, you know, just like back by popular demand, what you folks all wanted, you know, and it's Windows 11, and it looks and feels like Windows 7. Oh, because it still is.
That's what they did with Windows 10.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
The problem is that Windows 7, the way it was, is too easy for someone to grab and put on another machine, and Microsoft doesn't make any money when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it's not about you, and it's not about what makes the consumer, the user, happy. It's what makes the shareholders happy.
But that's some of the features they could change.
They could, but
they're missing the boat on that one.
They really are. But
yeah.
It's all their concern. That's why they keep talking. They continue it during their shareholder meetings. They continue and the phone conversations they have every quarter. I forget what they're called, but they continue to talk about Windows being a subscription model so that they can say every year a million, you know, 70 million people are going to pay $10 a piece or $20 a piece or $50 a piece. So we have a guaranteed income of 700 million or $4 billion or whatever the other number I said was, guaranteed a year. Every year, that's what they're aiming for. They want to know that money is coming in regardless.
But we're already running into subscription fatigue with television type services. Now you're going to want to add another subscription on for your OS too.
Well, yeah, I'm shocked and honored at the number of people who have subscribed to the SNIC newsletter
because
it's another subscription, and I do get that.
Yep.
But I send it out every week, and so far people seem to be pretty happy with it, so I'm going to continue to do it.
And speaking of old code that gets looked at finally, they have a great name. So SHA-1, one of the secure hashing algorithms, which was introduced in 1995, there was a proposed weakness discovered in 2014. It was only implemented in 2017. And now it's been named Shambles, Shambles. They took the weakness from millennia to centuries to now just months to break an SHA-1 encrypted hash.
Yeah, if you're writing code, don't use SHA-1.
Yeah. We moved to SHA-2 like 10 years ago, and SHA-3 is already ready, but we don't need it yet.
Well, but there's bcrypt and there's
there's a lot of other good ones. Yeah. But so they're going on the new paradigm that you have to come up with a cool name for your weakness.
Yeah, right.
So Shambles, SHA.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom, what's up?
Yeah, hi. You know, I used Windows 7 for many years and then got the free upgrade eventually to Windows 10. I don't understand it. There isn't that much of a difference from my perspective of the user interface. What is the preference that people have Windows 7 over 10?
Any little difference is monstrous to some people.
Right. We talked about this earlier. People don't like change. The simple fact that the desktop looks a little different.
The control panel. They relabeled
crazy.
In the control panel alone, they reorganized and renamed things.
It's not called control panel anymore. It's settings.
Too, I know. Yeah. But how many people are there like that are so stuck?
Oh, quite a few.
25% of the Windows market is still using Windows 7.
Yeah.
That many, huh?
It's.
I mean, look, I don't like Microsoft for many reasons. Like Windows ME, which I know Dave and Mike shares my disgust for that old system. But you can't expect Microsoft to carry the full load of a legacy system on their development team. It's just too much to ask.
I completely agree. But that's not the point. It is what people ask because they don't like change.
And I would guess a lot of it is just the average person with their home computer doesn't know any better about Windows 10 versus Windows 7. They don't keep up on security issues. They just
Microsoft
use their computer.
Spent a huge amount of time and effort to advertise. To tell people this is coming.
And people got annoyed by the constant nagging to upgrade to Windows 10.
How many calls did we get about how do I turn that off?
How do you turn that off? Never 10 is still getting downloads from people that are trying to stop Windows 10 from installing. And all the calls we got from people where when that nag screen came up, it was do it now or do it later. There was never a don't do it at all. And so people would wake up in the morning and their computer looked completely different.
Right.
People
don't like change. It's that simple.
Listen, I don't like change either, to be quite honest, but things do change, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Well, it's what Nick has said. The color of an icon changed, and someone came in and said their computer was broken.
Yes.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. People are confused now. Microsoft just changed Edge, which is their browser. It's now essentially the Chrome browser. With a different icon on the front. But it's a different icon. I got people saying, where is my browser?
Yeah.
But they probably don't even know browser. How do I get to the internet?
Right. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing. But yeah, they just...
How do I get to the Googles?
Yeah, how do I get to...
You click the E button.
Yeah, yeah.
How about the G button for Chrome, for Google Chrome?
Right.
Yeah. All right, well... Time goes on.
Yeah.
Life goes on, too.
Yeah. Most regular people don't upgrade their OS until they buy a new computer. And computers have gotten pretty reliable, and we're seeing people keep them 5-10 years before they start dying.
I still get people asking.
Yeah.
I still get people asking, where can I buy a Windows 7 computer?
Come to my company.
Well, a lot of that
where I work, we're still all on Windows 7.
Yeah, I bet.
So a lot of that too was the annoyance at how radically different Windows 8 was,
right?
And the perceived difference of Windows 10. That if someone actually started using Windows 10, they probably wouldn't notice the difference. But there's that whole fear that it was different, and I don't want to have to deal with that.
I went and assisted my wife at work to put a different email system onto. Thunderbird. So she now has both her old email and her new email on Thunderbird because she didn't want a different program. She wanted Thunderbird.
Yeah.
She wanted Thunderbird. This is what I use.
And it's yes, dear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's it. But the point is.
Even though the other program is 95% the same.
It doesn't matter.
Yep.
You click your inbox and you click your message.
I'm working with a company now, and they have three choices. Well, soon to be two choices: Horde, Round Cube, and Squirrel Mail for online email. There's one person who keeps changing it two or three times a day because he can't decide which one he likes.
Yep.
The major difference between them is the colors. And how wide the strip down the side that lists the folders is. That is literally the major difference among the three of them. But he sees them as he sees them as massively different and cannot decide.
It's a functional equivalent of fidgeting, basically.
Yeah.
Fidgeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a.
No lie, Tom.
I keep telling commit. No. You have a fear of commitment.
Yeah. You had to put a little hack in the code that says you've changed your choice 27 times. You get one more, and then that's going to be it.
We're wiping your machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. My suggestion is that the whole company just pick one and mandate it.
Yeah. He doesn't own the machine.
Well, we like people to have a choice. Okay, there's a difference between a choice and this guy has analysis paralysis and hasn't got any work done in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
He's sitting there fighting around.
Tom, it's literally about...
You should open all three of them in their own windows, side by side.
Yeah.
No, then he'll want probably dual monitors.
Yeah, right.
He's going to need three monitors then.
Yeah.
Yep. But that's it is the way people look. We all do it.
Yeah.
Every time you get a new computer, you spend how many days setting it up so it looks like you want it to look?
It's got to look like my old one.
We all do it. We all
yeah,
do
we
it.
Like things in a certain position. And we're all that way.
Right.
There's no denying that. But like you say, pick a one and commit with it.
I love the idea that now Chrome, the Chrome OS, can have multiple desktops. I use multiple desktops on Linux constantly. Mm-hmm. And now I can do that if I want to here. And I haven't yet, but
we had a customer
it tempts
in,
me.
We had a customer in the other day, and he had 16 desktop open. He didn't know how or why he had 16 desktops open.
Yeah, but he did.
He just kept going into the new desktop command and wondering where all his icons went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the multiple desktops as far as the Chromebook because I can have one with the various tabs that I have, and then I quick switch over to this other one that's running what they call an SDR program.
Right.
And
they're lovely, and some people love multiple desktops, and some people utterly hate them because they get confused.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some people want everything on their desktop. Some people want nothing on their desktop.
Right.
Exactly right.
And I like just being able to quick switch.
Yep.
And that's the key factor for me.
Yep.
You know,
but that's it, Tom. It's all about people's individual preferences. And some people just hate change.
Amen to that one.
Okay, guys. Have a great week.
All right. Thanks,
you too, Tom.
You
thanks
too.
For calling.
Yeah, I wish you know some people just don't do change, and I
nope.
get it. I get it.
And it can be dangerous upgrading to Windows 10 if you have a machine that's only marginally capable.
Right.
That you don't want your machine to suddenly get slower.
Well like I said, right. Our place, the only reason we're not going to Windows 10 is because a money issue.
Right.
We're
a
nonprofit.
That yep. And that's where you might want to tell them about Capterra, where they can look at alternatives to the software they're using that would work on a newer platform. That's one of the big purposes they say in their ads.
The software that we just got, because we wound up going from one software to another, it's fully Windows 10 capable.
Right.
And I mean, it's got some other features that we could actually use.
But if you're a not-for-profit and it costs you even $20 to upgrade each machine, you got to think, I got 25 machines.
Yeah.
That's money I don't have.
Yeah, no, and we've got, no, I bet you we've got about 50 machines in the building. And to go around and update all those plus the server.
Right. It's time and the technician to do that. Business, you don't just want to point to the person who's not sitting down right now and say, you're the new IT guy. Go make all the machines Windows 10.
Well,
that's a recipe for disaster.
The thing is, the hardware that we currently have won't handle it.
Right.
It just won't do it. It's got to have new machines. And again, being a nonprofit, and that's where I think Windows 7 will stick around for quite a while yet. It's because of that factor.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are places that, as we've discussed before, just can't drop the dime. And, you know, buy all new machines, yeah, because they're bigger, faster, and do this and that. It's always sometimes just a matter of, hey, I don't have the money to do it right now. So I got to limp along, as I say, you know, with what they have
right.
to do what they can.
Right, right, right.
You know, churches and charities and everything else.
And we all get it, but, you know, it the problem becomes at some point when somebody calls for support.
Yeah.
Like this guy earlier.
It's a double-edged sword.
Right. If you're lucky, you'll still find a new driver for your printer for Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
If not, oh well.
I got to admit, Windows 10, like you said, is very easy in finding it. When I set up my new machine, I just said, all right, well, I've got this wireless printer. And it went off and, oh, here it is.
Yeah.
Installed the drivers for it.
And then, Linux, by the way, Linux and Chromebook do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and my Chromebook, heck, I've had that different. On the wireless printer for a long time, and that's great.
Your color is green. It's supposed to be blue.
Right, exactly. There are people who will look at this and say, what are you running?
Yeah.
It's the Chrome browser. It's not blue.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I changed the background to green. I like green better than I like blue.
Yeah. But what's really annoying is that companies will remove the data and tech notes and knowledge articles and drivers about the older OSs when they're not supported anymore, so they can stop asking you questions. But that's very frustrating when we're going to look for stuff. So I kind of like that the Free Software Foundation is asking for the source code.
Yeah. They're not going to get it, but it's lovely that they're asking. Well, all right, that... That music tells me we're done for another week. We've had 2 hours of this insanity, and I think it's time for everybody to take a little nap. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everyone who called in. Thank you for those of you who were patient enough to wait in the queue. But don't worry. We'll be back next week with another 2 hours of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've been listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because you're the reason we remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. It is 57 minutes after the hour, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?